It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
A report in the Washington Post that when he met with Sergey Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, and Sergey Kislyak, the Russian ambassador to the United States last week, President Trump revealed some classified information regarding ISIS that, according to the report in the Washington Post, wasn't exactly his to share. It was intelligence that had been developed by a U.S. partner. According to a quote from H.R. McMaster, the national security advisor, contained in the article in the Washington Post, quote, the president and the foreign minister reviewed common threats from terrorist organization to include threats to aviation. At no time were any intelligence sources or methods discussed, and no military operations were disclosed that were not already known publicly. According to the article, though, a potential problem here is that a city in which this intelligence was developed was identified, which could give the Russians clues to how the intelligence was developed. This, of course, as you can imagine, is a very, very urgent story here at the White House. We're waiting for some sort of reaction. H.R. McMaster came by the upper press office as we were all up there trying to gather some information. When he saw the gathered media, he kind of chuckled and said, this is the last place I want to be. I'm leaving.
All right. Well, I think he said, I'm leaving. Sandy Rios with you. That was John Roberts on Fox last night. And that's kind of the way it went down. Again, just as the news was breaking, special report was going on, and John was breathlessly reporting that this Washington Post article claiming that Donald Trump, in a meeting with Sergey Lavrov and the other Russian ambassador, leaked information, highly critical classified information. And the Washington Post article cites unnamed sources, former national security experts with former administrations. Those are the quotes. So I think, you know, the first thing I'm saying is who in the world, who is leaking? Who is in that meeting? And then calling the Washington Post and telling them the private remarks of President Donald Trump to these high-level leaders. Who's doing that? Well, we still don't know because the Washington Post just kept anonymous sources, high-level former national security experts, you know, dying really and truly to destroy this president. And I have to say, the follow-up report this morning was in the newsroom at the Washington Post. When they realized that their story had gotten so much traction, they broke out in applause. Because, you know, they don't have an agenda. Of course, they are just reporting the news, right? Just informing you of the stuff you need to know. And they're so objective that earlier in the day, they printed an article titled, Trump Must Be Impeached. Here's Why. By Lawrence Tribe, a radical leftist attorney. But Trump must be impeached. Here's why. And then just a few hours later, lo and behold, we have this, man, this heads up to the American people that Trump leaked information to the Russians in a meeting. And it was reported by former high up officials, anonymous. So it continues. And this flood of leaks from inside the White House, it just stuns me. It really does stun me. So James Rosen, James, okay, I'll just tell you, I like James. I'm not crazy about John. I'm not as a person, but John has an agenda. He's right in there with the rest of them, doing what he can. So he has an interaction with James Rosen, and I just want you to hear how James challenges him. Let's listen.
The president, by definition, decides what's classified and what's declassified, correct, John? He has that authority.
He has ultimate authority over declassification. The problem with this, James, is that this intelligence document was actually developed and in fact, probably owned by one of our partners. And we don't know which partner this was. We have a number of them around the world. Judging by the location, though, of the intelligence, it's probably pretty safe to say that this was a partner that either had some rich assets in the Middle East or was actually in the Middle East itself. So he was not given permission by this partner to divulge this to the Russians. And from what I'm reading, this partner probably would likely be somewhat unhappy that this information was disclosed to the Russians. In the Washington Post, it reports that the CIA and the NSA had to play cleanup on this to some degree to call that intelligence partner to tell them what had happened.
And you know what? If the Washington Post printed it, it must be gospel, right? Yes, John. And so he goes on speculating. Well, it must have been, you know, an inside partner. And they, you know, if they found out about this, they would probably be really unhappy. And on and on it goes. The speculative reporting, it really was pretty stunning. I'm going to give you another example of it in a second if I don't run out of time in this segment. But then Catherine Herridge, who I do trust, came on, and this was her report.
I've been pulsing my network of contacts and reached someone on the House Intelligence Committee to ask if they had been notified of such a breach by the president sharing information with the Russian ambassador last week in the Oval Office about a sensitive source, which led us to conclude that terrorist groups were working with explosives to turn laptops into bombs for aircrafts heading into the United States. They had not been notified of such a breach. I would add, in terms of the sourcing issue, that a complaint long has been among some of our allies that the U.S. is a little loose with this information or that it cannot be secured properly, as we saw with WikiLeaks. So that is sort of another element that I think further inflames some of the issues surrounding this reporting. Well, I think when you always approach this style of reporting, you always have to ask yourself, to what degree is the central argument or element based on anonymous sources, and to what degree is that claim rebutted by individuals either on the record or also through anonymous sources? And what jumped out at me through the Washington Post story is that the central allegation is based on unnamed sources, but there was an on the record what appears to be a response from the National Security Advisor saying, I was in the room. We talked about the threats facing the United States and aviation, but at no time were confidential sources or methods disclosed. So I think the viewers have to balance really the quality of the information and the sourcing as well in this case. I would add that John Roberts makes a very good point, which is that the president is the ultimate arbiter over whether information is declassified. And it's always sort of an art rather than a science as to when the release of information actually impacts the method of collection and the sourcing. So what may seem like a grave breach to one individual would not necessarily cross that threshold with another. And that is the nature of intelligence itself, James.
Yeah. And so what she's saying is, and actually, you know, it wasn't John Roberts who came up with the idea that the president of the United States has the final authority to declassify anything he wants to declassify. So there is no breach, you know, whatever he said, there's no breach. If he decided he wanted to share that with the Russians, he has full authority. It's his judgment. It's nobody else's. He can do that. So assuming that he said something, you know, my mind is just blown at the continual leaks of these private conversations. Doesn't anybody care about that? These supposed national security experts who are so concerned are so eager to run to the Washington Post or to the New York Times and leak these great stories, and then they cheer in the newsroom when they get lots of hits because they've done damage because the headline that they printed earlier was Trump must be impeached. So I'm thinking maybe they have a motive. Call me crazy, but I'm thinking maybe they do. Well, last night, H.R. McMaster, the head of the National Security Council, who I'm not crazy about for a lot of other reasons, was in the meeting, and he came out in front of the White House and made this statement, clip 9.
I just have a brief statement for the record. There's nothing that the president takes more seriously than the security of the American people. The story that came out tonight, as reported, is false. The president and the foreign minister reviewed a range of common threats to our two countries, including threats to civil aviation. At no time or intelligence sources or methods discussed. And the president did not disclose any military operations that were not already publicly known. Two other senior officials who were present, including the Secretary of State, remember the meeting the same way and have said so. Their on-the-record accounts should outweigh those of anonymous sources. And I was in the room. It didn't happen. Thanks, everybody.
All right, so if you read this article in the Washington Post claiming that Trump revealed highly classified information to Russian foreign minister ambassador, because they know, you know, the Washington Post, they're in the know. They would know because of these former intelligence officials. You don't think they might be maybe worked for Obama, do you? I'm just asking. So, interestingly enough, the information that they are claiming Trump gave is referred to, according to a U.S. official familiar with the matter. That's the quote here. This is code word information, using terminology that refers to one of the highest classification levels used by American spy agencies. Oh, that and ironically, that code word information, that was the same level that, oh, the email on Mrs. Clinton's homebrew server were forwarded. Same classification, highly, intensely secret, should not be shared. That's what Mrs. Clinton shared. But that's, you know, the Washington Post didn't cover that. I don't think they put that part in about Mrs. Clinton. They just are accusing Donald Trump, who has every right, he is president, to say what he wants to say to the Russians. And so, but Trump must be impeached. Here's why, says the Washington Post. But of course, this article claiming he leaked highly classified information in this private meeting, they have no motivation for saying that, right? And the reason they cheered was just because they're trying to save the Republic, right? Just saying. Okay, so CNN interviewed the author of this article in the Washington Post, and this is how that went. Cut 10.
Well, first of all, a lot of folks want things to go viral. They think that's the job of the news media now, which it's not, of course. And you should play the beginning of the clip where he had me sit through President Trump, then candidate Trump, on the stump.
That's Kellyanne Conway. And we actually want cut 10, CNN.
Rick, let me just go to you first, okay, because I want to give you a chance. I want to make it clear here. He's saying your story is false and no sources and methods were disclosed, but I want to be loud and clear here. Your story does not say sources and methods were disclosed. It says a specific plot was discussed from which one would be able to figure out sources and methods. Am I correct?
I think that's right, and I think that the White House is playing word games here to that effect to try to blunt the impact of this story. Nor do any of these White House officials who are denouncing this story, nor have any of them offered any explanation why, if this was also above board and not problematic in any way, why did the National Security Council, coming out of this meeting, feel it was necessary to contact the CIA director and the director of the National Security Agency to give them a heads up on what Trump had just told the Russians?
Right, so the bottom line is, you stand by this story on every word of it. He says it's false. You say no.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the problem is, how can we trust them? How can we trust them when they are printing in their newspaper on a daily basis every single negative thing they possibly can, when they don't include all of the information, when it's all one-sided, when they conveniently leave out any kind of discussion of Mrs. Clinton and her role or the Clinton Foundation, when they cheer in the newsroom, when their hit pieces resonate with the people, they're thrilled, they're delighted, they are so excited. It's a new Watergate for them. It's a chance to have a president impeached, and they're not even hiding it. It's on their headline, "This is why Trump must be impeached." There is a bombshell story that I'm going to get to in the last segment today. Remember that DNC staffer who was killed on the streets of Washington? Young guy, last July, died. There was no robbery. We now know that according to his laptop information, he was, in fact, communicating with WikiLeaks. He was one of the technology guys at the DNC, and the speculation at the time was that he was the one leaking the email to the DNC, and now there's proof that he was connected with WikiLeaks. We'll come to that afterwards, but here we go. All right, so the president, in the midst of everything last week, signed another order establishing an Election Integrity Commission. It's a great story, but you probably missed it. So we're going to come back to it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrades. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
Help your kids get interested in school.
Welcome to Tips with youth educator Dr. Bill Ziegler.
I know as a high schooler, I became disinterested in school and even began to check out a few times. I think it's because I struggled academically in the classroom. I found it so hard to get A's and B's. As a matter of fact, I rarely did. But what I did find success in is music. I excelled in the music room. I played my saxophone, I made it to district band, I did some really cool and exciting things. And this motivated me to perform better in the classroom. That's right, parents, music helps kids perform better in the classroom. So get your kids involved in music today, and they will find a skill they will be able to use for the rest of their lives.
Great educational resources are available at 4tips.org. That's the number 4tips.org. TIPS is an outreach of the Christian Educators Association.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. There may be a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Toni Richardson works for the Coney School in Augusta, Maine. She's also a devout Christian woman, and her faith landed her in hot water with school officials. Miss Richardson was accused of imposing strong religious beliefs on a coworker who happened to attend her church. The district laid out their case against Miss Richardson in a coaching memorandum. I have a copy of that memo. They accused her of using phrases like, "I will pray for you," and "you were in my prayers." The district said such language is unacceptable in the classroom, even if the other person attends the same church. First Liberty Institute says that memorandum is a gross violation of the law. They filed a complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, charging the school district with religious discrimination. Attorney Jeremy Dice tells me school workers are not required to check their faith in at the schoolhouse door. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The Supreme Court will not hear an appeal to reinstate North Carolina's voter ID law. Now, the law was struck down in a lower court. It required every person who wanted to vote to have a photo ID. It also cut down days available for early voting. Justices in the lower court said the law targeted specifically African Americans. Now, Governor Pat McCrory, former Governor Pat McCrory, rather, is the one who filed the first appeal. Reaction has been swift to this announcement.
These measures were all going to make it harder for North Carolinians to vote. They were in particular going to impact the African American community. And the state of North Carolina, when asked over the course of years to come forward with some sort of rationale for why these measures were necessary, they could not do so.
And Governor Roy Cooper is weighing in on the decision, saying in a statement in part, "The court found this law sought to discriminate against African-American voters with surgical precision. I will continue to work to protect the right of every legal registered North Carolinian to participate in our democratic process." Now, the state NCGOP released a statement a short time ago saying that Governor Roy Cooper and Attorney General Josh Stein have blocked the people's desire for the voter ID law. Now, the NCGOP will hold a news conference later on this afternoon. We will have more reaction from them as well as all of the latest developments on this story for you later on this evening. But for now, reporting in Raleigh, Amy Elliott, Spectrum News.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. You heard that. That was Spectrum News. And that's what happened yesterday while everything else was breaking loose. The Supreme Court refused to hear an appeal to uphold the voter ID law in North Carolina. Well, that made me think of Jay Christian Adams, because Jay Christian is all about election integrity. And I was very curious, and am, to know what he thinks about the Supreme Court refusing to hear that case. So, Christian, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
Christian, my understanding is that it really, really wasn't a matter of the Supreme Court arguing with the merits of the case. It was something very different, wasn't it?
Well, in fact, the denial of cert from the Supreme Court actually said so. It said, you know, this is a great opportunity to remind everything that when we don't take a case, we're not saying anything about the merits of the case. So all it does is let a Fourth Circuit decision stand that struck down North Carolina's voter ID law and changes to the election law. So it's not indicative of any broader jurisprudence.
So it doesn't really indicate where the Supreme Court might, you know, how they might feel. That really doesn't say anything about that. That's the point. But I guess the point that I'd want to make, for certainly for North Carolina listeners and for the broader audience, is that this part of it was the confusion, as I understand, on who had the authority to bring this case. And when Pat McCrory was governor, he was the one who oversaw the appeal. And then the new governor, Roy Cooper, didn't want to do it because Roy Cooper is on the other side of the fence and doesn't really want voter ID. So it was that confusion that really caused this. But I guess, Christian, the question is, can North Carolina do anything to, is there any further recourse for them, or is this the end of that law?
Well, sure, there's recourse, because North Carolina legislature can still pass something. I believe they're very close to having veto-proof majorities in both houses. I don't know the particular numbers, but it's awfully close, if not already there. But look, this was broader than voter ID. North Carolina curtailed an early voting program that was causing fraud and same-day registration. They had to actually throw elections out, Sandy, because of people who came and registered and voted simultaneously who weren't allowed to vote. There were towns that had to throw their municipal elections out and do them over again because of voter fraud. So, you know, there is voter fraud that was encouraged by these laws. So the North Carolina General Assembly changed them and said, okay, we want to have a more controlled election day, and we can't keep throwing out municipal elections because of fraud. And that's what they did. It was way beyond voter ID that was at issue in this case.
And Christian, contrary to that report we just heard, my understanding is the North Carolina law, actually, they amended it partly. I'm just speaking off the top of my hat here, but some sort of amendment that made it even more possible and easier for minorities in North Carolina to get some sort of an ID so that they could vote.
Yeah, one of the favorite arguments of the foes of election integrity is that there were a lot of people who weren't born in hospitals in the 20s and 30s and 40s in the South because of Jim Crow and so forth. And so they didn't go through the normal process of birth certificates. That is true. And so what they did in North Carolina is the same thing they did in South Carolina, and that's pass a hardship affidavit, that if you didn't have the underlying documents to get voter ID, and make no mistake, there are people who don't. I know a lot of people don't think that's possible, but it is. If you don't have it, then you could fill out an affidavit that says, here are my circumstances why I don't have it. And basically, it was a good fix because it got people signing a document under penalty of perjury that they were who they say they were, and criminals don't like to linger around the polls and fill out paperwork, so it was a pretty good fix. But it still didn't matter. The court still struck it down.
All right, so we hope that North Carolina could come up with something, get around their governor and come up with some good counter-proposal to this. And meanwhile, last week, in the midst of all the Comey news, which was big, there was something that happened on Thursday that was also big, but it really got covered up, Christian. And it was the establishment by an executive order of the President of the United States for a commission on election integrity. You have said that you believe that under the last 8 years of Obama, that voting had become like the Wild West. Explain that.
Well, under the Obama, Holder, Lynch, Comey justice system, this Justice Department wasn't prosecuting anybody for voter fraud. I mean, we had case after case. I cited in a press release at the Public Interest Legal Foundation that I run sent out last week, instance after instance of known voter fraud. There was federally a violation of federal election law, criminal election law. It could send you to federal prison. Nothing happened. I mean, you had Wendy Rosen. This is one of my favorites. She was the Democrat nominee for the first Maryland congressional district. In other words, she was nominated by the Democrat Party. She was voting twice for president in Florida and Maryland. She was registered in both states. It's a federal felony to vote twice in the same federal election. Nothing happened to her, and nothing happened to her because of her politics. We had instances like Lessa Dallas Sowers voting six or seven times in Mississippi. We had Meloise Richardson, an election official in Cincinnati, who said on TV, on the TV station, that she voted six times for President Obama. Nothing happened to these criminals. And when you don't prosecute voter fraud, Sandy, what do you get? You get more voter fraud. And that's what happened for 8 years.
And Christian, I know that the Public Interest Legal Foundation did some very detailed research into voter fraud in Virginia and other states, and you found significant numbers of illegal immigrants or non-citizens voting, not enough to sway an election, but enough to indicate that the problem was probably much greater than you could even verify.
Well, in Virginia, it could have swayed an election. Remember, we lost in Virginia an attorney general's race twice, and one time in particular by a couple hundred votes. And it doesn't take much when you have a state like the size of Virginia, when only a couple hundred votes make a difference, that it was illegal votes. We had, in Virginia, we are finding aliens on the voter rolls were accidentally discovered and removed, but these were only the ones, Sandy, that were accidentally discovered. There's no system in place to find them. And we have the names of almost 5,000 aliens, 5,000 non-citizens removed from the rolls by accident in Virginia in just the last couple of years. And so when you find 5,000 by accident, it tells you there's a lot more out there that are still on the rolls. And I got to tell you, when it came to that Virginia Attorney General's race, I'm convinced it was decided by illegal voting. And it's made a difference because the Virginia Attorney General refused to defend certain laws. We've heard that story before.
Yeah, like marriage.
Absolute radical. So yes. It makes a difference.
It absolutely does. All right, so the president last Thursday then formed this commission, and it's going to be headed by Vice President Pence, co-chaired by Chris Kobach, the former Secretary of State or Attorney General for Kansas. Anyway, great record on this whole issue. And so it sounds like it's going to be a great team. Are you optimistic about this, Christian? Can they actually do something, you think?
No, I think they can. And, you know, the amazing thing is has been the reaction of the academic elites, the far-left crowd. They are absolutely losing their marbles over this. It hasn't even started, and they're attacking it and claiming that it's, you know, the return of the Klan. But these are liars, Sandy. These are people who will say anything to hide the facts. If you don't want to look into the number of aliens on the rolls, which the federal government has all the tools to do, they could do it. It doesn't take an act of Congress. They could do it now, and they probably will. If you come out against that, that means you are an accessory after the fact to crimes. It means you are hiding criminal activity from the American people. So pay close attention. Remember the names of the people and the organizations who are opposing this commission, because they are opposing getting to the truth about criminal activity. That is an unsavory, distasteful, immoral position to be in.
You know, to prove your point even further, last Thursday when the president signed this order establishing this Election Integrity Commission, doesn't that, Christian, go to the heart of what the left claims? They are screaming and screeching and pulling their hair out about that Russia interfered with our elections. Russia hacked our elections. Wouldn't they, if they really wanted an election system that was the way it's supposed to run, if they're really concerned about any Russian involvement, wouldn't they welcome and herald and multiply the news that there was going to be an Election Integrity Commission? This really would be the fix for that, wouldn't it?
Well, it makes you wonder about this whole Russian narrative. Is it a diversion from the real foreign influence in American elections? Because, look, these are foreigners who are on the voter rolls. When you have lots and lots of foreigners on the voter rolls, it is foreign influence over American elections. And so why aren't the Democrats, why aren't these academic elites, these Soros-funded nonprofits, why aren't they so hot to figure out the level of foreign influence in our elections there? Instead, it's this phantom Russian, you know, this is the first time these people have been worried about Russia since 1917. I mean, it's a punchline in the past when you worry about Russian involvement. You know, Hollywood made movies making fun of people who worried about the Russians, and now suddenly it's the Democrats who are obsessed about this phantom Russian menace.
You know, I remember really well, I believe it was in January of 2016, Christian, when suddenly Jay Johnson started talking about declaring our election system as critical infrastructure. And on the other side of his mouth, he started indicating, before this was even a discussion, that the Russians might interfere with our elections. I don't know if you remember that. That was the first, I remember hearing him say that, and I thought, what is he talking about? And then I thought, he's laying the groundwork. He's laying the groundwork for either to excuse why Mrs. Clinton might not win or to discredit any victory, outside victory of a Republican candidate. But he is the first person that really injected this into the media mainstream, I think. Just your comments.
And unfortunately, the new DHS secretary hasn't reversed his position yet. That's something that needs to happen. Is the new DHS secretary needs to say, no, the federal government doesn't have control over state elections, nor should it under the Constitution. But, Sandy, they play the long game. This isn't just about discrediting Hillary. This is about centralizing power. They want Washington, D.C. to have more control over state elections because they want central control, just like they do on every other issue. But the beauty is the founders decentralized our elections, which makes it harder to hack, which makes it harder to manipulate. When you have the states in charge of elections and counties in those states, then you have decentralization that does not allow one central authority figure to take control of the process. The founders were brilliant, but that's why these Jay Johnson wants to start the process of centralization. It must be resisted. The states control their own elections, and that's how it should be.
So on this Election Integrity Commission, I would think, that the Washington Post, the New York Times, the rabid, you know, Trump must be impeached crowd could not really do much to stop this commission. Would I be right to think that?
100% right, because this is the president who is putting it together. That's why they're so upset, because normally that crowd of elite academics, Soros-funded interest groups, and the media like the Washington Post totally control the battlefield. You know, they're the ones who shout down anybody who talks about criminal activity in our elections. They're the ones who make fun of them and mock them on TV. But now you have a president who is seizing the narrative back from them, using the levers of his own control to actually get the facts. How many aliens are there registered in the rolls? You know, Sandy, you give me a month, and I could tell you the names of all the aliens registered to vote. It's not a hard process to do. The big question is why it hasn't been done for 8 years.
Yeah, that is the big question. And then when the issue of voter fraud or fraudulent voting came up with Donald Trump talking about votes being cast, remember, I know you do, how he was derided and how he was mocked. Our elections are safe. There's no voter fraud. It was just amazing. So they created another false narrative when you know, because this is the heart of your work, that there's plenty of it. And it needs to be rooted out. Well, Christian, it's great to talk to you this morning. Christian, again, is the president and general counsel for the Public Interest Legal Foundation. He is a national treasure, and I always enjoy when he joins us. Thank you, Christian.
Thanks, Sandy. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. Talk to you soon. All right, well, Sandy Rios in the morning, and when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about that Seth Rich revelation this morning. It is really amazing, and you can look to this, if they report it, to be a very big story. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
and such were some of you. But you were washed, you were sanctified, you were justified in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and by the Spirit of our God. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Democrat Congress members have introduced the Therapeutic Fraud Prevention Act. It classifies any biblical counseling or reparative therapy concerning sexual confusion as fraudulent and illegal. If gender is fluid and sexuality exists on a spectrum, how could therapy that facilitates change be fraudulent? If a person has unwanted same-sex attraction, can't that change too? I guess fluid only flows in one direction.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association. Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Rhonda had always felt in her heart that abortion was somehow wrong. Hi, Kim Cattola for Cradle My Heart today. But she chose to listen to those who said it wasn't a baby and it was just a woman's choice. Afterwards, excuses and defenses put up against the truth only made the pain worse. Counseling didn't help and only increased her confusion and hopelessness. But with the help of an after-abortion Bible study, Rhonda learned that seeking God's best channels our sorrow His way. The worldly sorrow of self-justification is a spiritual dead end. Godly sorrow means repenting, admitting our part in the abortion decision. This repairs our emotions as God wipes out our sins and refreshes us by healing our hearts. Find a network of Christ-centered organizations offering help for unplanned pregnancy and hope after abortion at CradleMyHeart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts one story at a time, CradleMyHeart.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Trump meets today with Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who is intent on becoming the next caliph or ruler of a new Sharia supremacist empire. Ironically, topic A of their conversation is supposed to be bilateral cooperation in destroying the Islamic State, a group that also seeks the restoration of the caliphate and has enjoyed Erdogan's support. Mr. Trump has been working hard to establish a personal rapport with foreign leaders, even those with agendas directly at odds with America's. It would be a serious mistake, however, to paper over differences with Erdogan's Turkey, which has ceased to be a reliable ally, whether with respect to the global jihad or just about anything else. Indeed, Erdogan is playing for the other side. He must be held accountable, not rewarded, for collaborating with U.S. adversaries abroad and helping subversive Muslim Brotherhood groups here. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Okay, Sandy Rios back with you. Just a couple of other things I want to tell you because I'm going to intentionally tell you the good things that are happening because I don't think you're going to hear them otherwise. The Election Integrity Commission is just one of those things. The other executive order that the president signed yesterday is called the Protecting Life in Global Health Assistance Policy. And it basically says that the Mexico City policy, which bans the use of federal funds for any kind of abortion, will continue to apply to any international entities, including Planned Parenthood. No tax dollars to international organizations who perform or support abortion. And so that's what he did that yesterday. The State Department issued that statement. So just want you to know that. Also, President Trump is going to light the White House blue to honor the police. And he signed a statement yesterday. He said, during Peace Officers Memorial Day and Police Week, we honor the men and women of law enforcement who have been killed or disabled in the course of serving our communities. Police officers are the thin blue line whose sacrifices protect and serve us every day. And we pledge to support them as they risk their lives to safeguard ours. And that's part of the proclamation. And so he is going to, the White House is going to go blue. Remember, the White House went rainbow when President Obama was there to celebrate the gay marriage decision. So my, what a difference an administration makes. And I wanted you to know about that. And also, you might know that the S&P and the NASDAQ closed with record highs yesterday. So something good is happening on the business front. Housing is up. The unemployment rate is down to record lows. So there are some really good things happening, although the Washington Post might not tell you, and CNN might not tell you either. All right, a very big story has broken. This is a story that should have received more coverage when it actually happened. And the story is that a young DNC staffer named Seth Rich, and by the way, he was there on their technology team. He had access to all of their email, all of their information. He was shot early one morning in the streets of Washington in a very nice area. The cameras show two men coming up behind him and shooting him in the back. There was no robbery. Nothing was stolen. And at the time, people speculated. In fact, Julian Assange came out and offered a reward and hinted that Seth Rich was working with him, leaking. Well, this was the hint. He didn't actually say it. But the inference was that Seth Rich was leaking information and email to WikiLeaks from the DNC, that he was the leaker. But others said, oh, that's ridiculous. That, oh, no, it couldn't be, because, you know, it has to be the Russians. It can't be an insider doing such a thing. And so now NBC5 out of D.C. is reporting this as of yesterday.
Seth worked for the DNC. Some believe his death was tied to the WikiLeaks release of a barrage of DNC emails. Rich's death was 12 days before the email dump, and WikiLeaks put up reward money to help find his killer. Then, GOP lobbyist Jack Berkman, who also donated reward money toward the investigation, claimed a former U.S. intelligence officer told him the Russians were behind his death. Seth's family is outraged, saying the claims are false and they want to redirect the focus back to catching Seth's killer. D.C. police and the family believe he was shot and killed during a robbery attempt steps from his home in the Bloomingdale neighborhood. Police say his wallet wasn't taken.
Yeah, so that's misleading. And let me just tell you why I say that. Rod Wheeler, who is a former D.C. homicide, who's doing his own investigation into that. I think, you know, I just wonder if there's a divide between Seth Rich's parents, because the dad has come out saying there's no way he was connected to WikiLeaks and being very angry about any kind of indication, wanting to say it was a robbery, which is what she just said. But there is no, the police said, and I remember this well, that there was no robbery. His wallet was not taken. There was nothing taken. There was zero, zed, nada, any kind of information or a clue that it was a robbery. And so this is what Rod Wheeler is saying. He, again, is a former D.C. homicide detective, and he's leading a parallel investigation. So he told Fox 5 D.C. that he believes there's a cover-up and that the police department may have been told to back down for the investigation. Listen to this. This is Rod's words. The police department nor the FBI have been forthcoming. They haven't been cooperating at all. I believe that the answer to solving his death lies on that computer, which I believe is either at the police department or the FBI. I've been told both. Wheeler added, by the way, I'm reading from Fox. Wheeler added that a source in the D.C. police department looked him in the eye and told him that investigators were told to stand down in the case. Now, Rod says, that is highly unusual for a murder investigation, especially from a police department. Again, I don't think it comes from the chief's office, but I do believe there's a correlation between the mayor's office and the DNC, and that is the information that will come out. The result, you may remember this. Assange implied he came out offering a $20,000 reward, leading to any news of who might have killed Seth Rich. And so, you know, Assange is the head of WikiLeaks. So this is, and then yet the father and others are saying, oh, there's no way. No, he was not connected with WikiLeaks. He was just killed for no reason on the streets by two men. at like 4 o'clock. It was like early morning, like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. Assange also implied in August that Rich was killed because he was the WikiLeaks source of emails from top DNC officials showing they conspired to stop Bernie Sanders from becoming the party's presidential nominee. The controversy resulted in Debbie Wasserman Schultz having to resign as DNC chairperson. Security footage showed two men following Rich home moments before he was shot twice in the back. Police said nothing of value was stolen from Rich. And they are saying that his laptop leaks shows proof that he was in contact with WikiLeaks. But of course, Rod Wheeler saying that the FBI or the DC police have that laptop and are not releasing it and are not talking and not cooperating. So this is really, what does this mean? Well, this means that it sounds like possibly somebody from within the DNC, Seth Rich, who was their technology person, was the leaker of the John Podesta email, of all of that damaging stuff against Hillary, not the Russians, but an insider at the DNC, who was consequently killed by who? I don't know. Someone has said, and you just heard that on the report, that it might have been Russians that killed him, but I don't know. I mean, who killed him? I remember at the time there was all this speculation about the people around the Clintons are always dying and people were adding him to their list. Well, it's true that he is the one that obviously leaked her email. No, I didn't mean to say that. It's true that it might have been him whose cooperation with WikiLeaks, that he was the leaker, and then he was the one that then the email that were leaked by whoever it was were damaging to Mrs. Clinton. So it's just a very convoluted but interesting story, and you're going to hear a lot about it today. You know, I started the show by, you know, playing John Roberts, who I don't trust John's reporting. I just don't. He has an agenda. So there you go. So I was listening to another report on Fox last night, and it just occurred to me as I'm listening how vague and ridiculous the language. And the report is that Syria has these crematoriums to kill opposition, and that they're killing thousands in this crematorium. And that's supposed to be the takeaway from this. But I want to play it for you because I want you to listen to the language. Because, okay, I'll give you a heads up. They say things like, well, here's the roof. They show a map. Here's the roof with that they believe might be a crematorium. I mean, there's a lot of heat coming from it. It could be, but we're not sure. But then they declare. And now Rich Hetson is a good reporter. So I'm really not laying this at his feet. But whoever is giving out this information from the State Department, it is way too loose, I think, to be reported as factual news. Let's listen. I'll show you what I mean.
In this complex, the Assad regime murders about 50 prisoners a day. To cover it up, the regime burns the evidence, its victims, here in a crematorium. This is according to the State Department. This afternoon, officials presented this evidence publicly, three surveillance photos spanning the last 4 years.
What we're assessing is that if you have that level of production of mass murder, then using the crematorium would allow the regime to manage that number of corpses coming out of the prison complex.
The State Department points to one image showing melted snow on the rooftop of a building on the western edge of the Sednaya prison facility. Officials say the heat from a crematorium operation probably caused it, though they cannot rule out the possibility the heat is from another source, nor can they say for certain this is a crematorium. Officials say this prison also detains up to 70 Syrians in one cell, designed for five people, subjecting them to a disturbing mixture of abuse. The reason for this presentation, the next phase in a strategy to compel Russia to pressure the Assad regime, its ally.
We are appalled by the atrocities that have been carried out by the Syrian regime. And these atrocities have been carried out seemingly with the unconditional support from Russia and Iran.
State Department officials say that public reprimand intensifies its Syria strategy. The administration says last week, President Trump and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson pressured Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov to rein in the Assad regime in Syria.
I do think it's important that President Trump is taking that step, but naming and shaming Russia for its role inside of Syria is not actually going to be sufficient, in my estimation, to force Russia to change.
Russia continues its support of the Assad regime, claiming regime change is a failed strategy, and that the United States and its allies are too focused on one man, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad.
Okay, that's enough.
Do you get the point?
I can't explain to you the mystery of why the State Department, who is still run by Obama appointees, and who I don't trust them yet. I just don't. Rex Tillerson, I think, is doing I'm impressed with what he's done so far, but he has hundreds of people in that building that are not on the same page. Trust me. And so they come out with this. Here's a serial view, an aerial view of there's melted snow, and heat probably caused it. And it could be a crematorium. We're not sure, but it could be. But the report starts out by saying it's a crematorium and they're killing people every day in it. But we're not sure. Here's the aerial view. It's melted snow. Could be a crematorium, but we're not ruling out that it could be something else. I mean, I just think that's ridiculous reporting. And I don't understand why the Obama appointees in the State Department are so hell-bent in bringing down Assad. I understand he's not a good guy, but I don't trust them. I don't trust them, you see? I just don't trust them. So we'll bring in a national security expert to kind of figure that out for us at a later date, but I just wanted you to hear that report. And speaking of fake news, did you hear Mika and Joe on Morning Joe talking about Kellyanne Conway? You have to hear this. Let's listen.
This is a woman, by the way, who came on our show during the campaign and which Trump in extensive fashion. And then she would get off the air. The camera would be turned off. The microphone would be taken off. And she would say, "Blech, I need to take a shower," because she disliked her candidate so much.
Also said, it was very interesting, also said that this is just like my summer in Europe. This is just my vacation.
I'm just doing it for the money.
I'll be off this soon. I don't know that she ever said this, I'm doing this morning, but she said, this is just my summer vacation, my summer in Europe, and basically, I'm going to get through this.
But first, I have to take a shower, because it feels so dirty to be saying what I'm saying. I guess she's just used to it now.
And also, I thought it was very interesting, after the Access Hollywood tape came out, that's when she started referring to Donald Trump as
her client.
My client.
Okay. What
my
more
client.
Do you need?
We're saying I'm separating. I don't believe in this guy. He's just my client.
All right. So Mrs. Mika and Mr. Joe, who are soon getting married, I guess, I don't know, you know, leaving their marriages and marrying each other, are telling us that Kellyanne Conway confided in them that she had to take a bath because she hated her boss so much because she was so disgusted by him. You know, I just, that is appalling to me, and that's fake news at its worst. Let's listen to just cut to a little bit as we go out. This is Kellyanne talking to Howard Kurtz.
Well, first of all, a lot of folks want things to go viral. They think that's the job of the news media now, which it's not, of course. And you should play the beginning of the clip where he had me sit through President Trump, then candidate Trump, on the stump in many different places praising Jim Comey. And it ended with Grand Rapids, Michigan. So I turned it around, as I often do, and I said, thanks for the trip down memory lane. We loved winning Michigan. And of course, he rolled his eyes. Possibly sexist, definitely right. What I call Trumpist.
Okay, well, that's Kellyanne talking about just one of her experiences on the air. I think that was with Anderson Cooper. She's talking about how they deal, how they treat her, and how they treat other members of the Trump press. It really is a stunning time. Fake news, fake reports, hints, harumphs that don't mean anything. And so, you know, I have to say, AFR Talk is doing a great job of covering the news. I hope you're listening all day, listening to the headlines, listening to Fred Jackson's newsroom, because they do a great job. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.